Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. We are here in League City, Texas. I'm joined as always by Metal Max Montana. Joanne would be proud of that one.
Yeah, she would.
And our guest today is Coach Tim Swords. Tim, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Really a pleasure to have this opportunity.
So Tim is the coach of Team Houston and Olympian Sarah Robles. And we were just out in his garage watching his team work. Got a bunch of young lifters out there working hard on a hot and humid Houston day. So for our viewers not familiar with you, tell us about you know, your athletic background, how you got into the sport of weightlifting.
Well, I had a couple older brothers that were fantastic athletes. One of them was a strength athlete before heavy weightlifting was cool. He was a football player and wrestler at Virginia Tech. We had a pretty nice, pretty elaborate weight room in our basement only because of him. And my father was the type of guy who would buy his five sons whatever they needed in order to excel in sport. He wasn't much on buying us anything else, but I think the fact that we were all pretty athletic and we put ourselves through college, it kind of saved him a bunch of money on the equipment he bought us. But we had a really nice weight room in the basement, and I kind of followed suit with my brother, who was a really pretty strong football player for the late 60s of Virginia Tech. And he was a guy that could do a stiff-legged deadlift for 550 pounds for 10 reps. You know, and this is went out with an Olympic bars with a six-foot straight bar. The Olympic bars, most of the stuff was the old York Herculean sets. I don't know if anybody out there remembers those things, but they had a 75-pound plates and some of that stuff. It was really old school stuff. But we had bench presses, we had dip bars, we had pull up bars. We had a power rack. We had a platform there. So you know, when it came to strength training, most of the people in the area actually would come to the house and lift in my parents' basement. So, you know, I got introduced to weight training by watching him, and I had the next brother was a guy who had an opportunity to play multiple sports in college, extremely fast, explosive guy. So, you know, I had these guys that I was looking to, and I was thinking, well, you know, I'm not real sure where I fit in this family because these guys were really good athletes. And at that time, I was kind of a pudgy little kid who would rather ride a skateboard and pick up a barbell. But after a period of time, I started dabbling with it a little bit. And I never forget the first time I ever tried to actually lift it. I think I was right before my freshman year. My brother gave me a barbell that had 130 pounds on it. And he was spotting me. Not very good, by the way. But he was there. And I took the bar down to my chest with 130 pounds. And of course, I couldn't do anything with it. And being an Irishman like I am, I'm a bit temperamental. I was very upset. And he, after about 10 seconds, he decided to take the thing off my chest, and I jumped up out of there like I was going to do something to this 6'3", 295-pound monster. But I said to him, you know, one of these days I'm going to get big and strong, and I'm going to kick your butt. Not quite like that. And he looked at me and laughed, and he says, "The day you can kick my butt is the day I know you're safe in public." And that was probably a true story.
I had when I have two much older brothers. They're 9 and 12 years older than me. So I'm 5 years old, and they're, you know, 14 and 17. And they just beat me up like a little brother gets beaten up. And my mom said in, you know, fourth grade, something like that, I wrote, "Well, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be able to do?" And I wrote, and you know, to my teacher, like, "I want to be big enough to beat my brothers up."
To kick my brother's butt. Yeah. Well, you know, because of age, the age difference, and they became a little more sedentary, and I kept on. You know, I got to the point where I could have pulled that off if I'd have wanted to, but you know, When you get to the point where you get to college and you're playing football and stuff, you know, you look at your brothers and you know what they really did. Was they did everything in their power really to help you out. So I was blessed with a great family. The other thing that you know that really kind of got me involved in Olympic lifting was back in those days they used to have these newsstands where you could go in, you could buy candy and you could go and buy milkshakes, and they had all the newspapers and all the magazines, all that stuff, and you go in there. Well, I was in there and I looked at a strength and health magazine. I think I was probably 13 or 14, whatever that was at the time. And I saw a picture of a strength. I saw a magazine, strength and health magazine from, I think it was 1970. And on the cover, it was Rick Holbrook, I believe it was. And I picked this thing up and I was looking at it. I was like, how do they do what they do? You know, and how does a person do this full snatch? Or how does Norbert Szymanski do this split snatch? And so I asked my mother if I could have the magazine. Well, being mildly dyslexic, my mom says, yeah, sure. So she said, well, maybe, you know, you can take this magazine. I didn't like to read so much, but I went home and I read the magazine three times, front to back, three times. And my dad came home. And she said, hey, he read the magazine three times. And my dad said, well, make sure he gets it every month because he'll read. He'll read it. So it was a picture of Rick Holbrook who kind of got me just because I was – it was – you know, I had these brothers that were good in baseball, and they were great football players. They were all-state football players. They were good in track. They were hurdlers, and they were pitchers, and they could do these things. And I looked at this. Well, they don't do this. I was telling my one brother's friend the other day. I said, you know, I wanted to do something different than they did. Yeah, I wanted to be an individual, you know, in that family. So the I looked to lifting. I never learned how to do it, but I was trying the Olympic press and the jerk, and the bar was crashing down on the basement floor, and my father was opening up the door and yelling down at me, keep the noise down and all this stuff. But I was down there trying, and I never really, doing basically a muscle clean or a continental clean with 300 pounds my senior in high school, just doing my best at trying to mimic what these guys were doing. Just trying to get strong, you know, eating those liver pills that Hoffman used to sell, and those protein pills, and drinking Energol and brewer's yeast and all that stuff that nobody in the these kids nowadays won't drink a milkshake if it doesn't taste like Hershey's chocolate syrup. Well, I was eating stuff that would, it was terrible. But I was just doing my best to try to get strong to help myself accomplish a goal. You know, and so, you know, the background with that and then just being kind of lucky to be put into the right place at the right time. It's been the evolution of me as an athlete is just truly blessed by having the right family, the right coaches who can motivate me to perform in beyond what I thought I could do. As a high school kid, then in military school, then in college. And I'm a guy that, I'm the type of guy that you tell me that you can't do it, I'm going to prove to you that I can. And almost to the point where I'm so stubborn about that I'm a fighter. You know, I want to win. I want to win, and, I'm not going to accept. Now, if you just beat me, that's fine. But I'm going to work hard so I'm going to have an opportunity to do better the next time we face each other. And that's been my mentality my whole life. And it's the same thing goes in the sport of weightlifting. I wasn't a very good weightlifter, but I was a person who trained hard and got strong. And then because of some God-given abilities, you know, I'm no Herschel Walker, I'm no, you know, Walter Payton, but a guy, but had some God-given ability, and I finally figured it out. I worked myself into some opportunities. And so that's basically how it all started. You know, we were raised in a small town in West Virginia. Everybody wanted to get the heck out of there. We wanted to go do something. We wanted to play at a higher level of sport. We wanted to see some of the country. I didn't want to stay there. I want to stay in a town of 7,000 people and work in a coal mine and and or you know, I wanted to go someplace. And when I was 12 years old, I went to a football game. My brother was playing at Virginia Tech, and I told my dad, I said, you know, I'd like to do that someday. And my father says to me, he says, well, if you work real hard, you might have a chance. He didn't tell me I was going to do it. He said, you got to work real hard. You got to pay attention. You have to have the discipline, and you got to be passionate. You know, so the passion to get strong, to get big and strong, and to work real hard and stay focused while other people are doing other things. You know, out doing things maybe they shouldn't be doing, or you know, they're partying or doing. You know, I was working hard. I'm gonna do the work first. I'll do the work first. I'll play later a little bit, but I'm gonna do the work first.
So, when was it that you transitioned and became a weightlifting coach?
Well, I was a strength coach at East Carolina University, and I'd done a brief deal with the National Football League, and I came back and they hired me as a strength coach. I had competed when I was a college football player in weightlifting at a couple of the NCAA weightlifting championships, which they called it back in those days. It wasn't University Nationals. So the strength coach is a guy named Jeff Johnson. He was a guy, he was one of the first guys that went to the Olympic Training Center as a, you know, when they brought Cohen in and Harvey Newton was there, and they took those guys in there. They have the first bunch that went in. He went also. Well, Jeff Johnson saw that I was passionate, and I wanted to learn. And we basically all we did was stuff from the hang position. We did everything from the hang. Power position was a good place for me. I was good out of that position. Didn't have the strongest legs in the world, but you know, being a guy that was where I was good at. Legs were average at best. But so I made the transition then, and what we were doing, we get recruits in. We got everybody on the team doing some form of Olympic lifting. You know, the ones who couldn't do stuff from the floor, we were doing things from the floor with older upperclassmen and stuff like that. We had swimmers doing it. We had everybody doing it. Track and field people, the throwers, and the only group that didn't cooperate with us were the college baseball program.
Can't get muscle bound.
Well, you know, the funny thing, I'll tell you a funny thing about that there. I won't dwell on long too much, but Hal Baird was our coach. He went to Auburn, became their coach. Pat Dye was my football coach. He went to Auburn, became their football coach. Bo Jackson came in. Bo Jackson was a football player and a baseball player. Hal Baird said, Bo Jackson will not lift weights. Coach Dye said, yes, he will. And then after that happened, Hal Baird kind of changed his way of thinking. Well, Coach Dye just basically said, hey, we take care of all the sports at the university. I'm assistant athletic director. He will lift weights. That's all there is to it in the conversation, or he won't play baseball anymore. And, of course, Hal Baird didn't want that to happen. But the baseball team, they did not want to participate at East Carolina University. Girls softball, everybody else did. And that's kind of how, you know, that worked. But when I actually started coaching weightlifting, we had a program there at East Carolina where we would go down and work with some of the inner city kids. It was more like a project. Greenville, North Carolina is not a big city, but they had a project area there. And we would go down and invite these kids to the strength complex, and we'd work with some of them. It was a fun thing to do. And that's when I basically found a very passionate about working with the youth. That was, you know, even then, you know, I knew that you know, this is what I like doing. So unfortunately, as a school teacher, which I did for 2 years later on, you can't. It's too much work for the pay you're doing, put the pay you're getting, and you're there long hours. So I couldn't do it anyway. During the summer times, I could do it, but I was always have to do continuing education and things like that. So I moved in a different direction, even though I taught school for 2 years.
So this time at ECU would have been in the late 70s?
This time would have been basically the latter half of 81.
Okay.
And then 82 and then 83. So I was there for roughly two and a half years as a strength conditioning coach. I trained hard. I trained hard in weightlifting. I was in a perfect environment. You know, I was in graduate school there then at that time. But I still had I still had aspirations of playing professional football. And the and that's when I went to the United States Football League and was involved with our president's team, the New Jersey Generals. Yeah, well, so
I want to talk to you about that more after the podcast, so we don't get on too much of a tangent. But you told us when you moved here to Houston that there was, in the whole city of Houston, a city of 5 million people, there was five weightlifters. And now you've had over 1,000 different athletes come and train in your garage. So you've obviously been instrumental in the growth of weightlifting in this area. And I think in a very unique position in USA Weightlifting to have great youth school age lifters and great senior lifters. You're probably the only coach at Pan Am's this year to have a male and a female, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
In Sarah Robles and Cameron Swart. So let's talk about this, because we saw a bunch of your kids out there lifting. What are the differences, the important differences in coaching youth athletes versus senior athletes?
Well, for me is that, like I said earlier, when you and I were talking, that I don't turn anybody away. I can honestly say that, unless you're just not a very good person. But you know, some of these kids out here today, and the 15 or 20 I had here yesterday, these were younger ones. You know, they all have different needs. So you know, I'm a big guy on working on athletic posture. So you know, I don't think weightlifting goes in to the actual posture, being able to have an isometric static spine. You know, it's an isometric position of your body, because there's all kind of weaknesses with these little kids. So most of the kids I train, they're fairly mobile. If they're not, we go through a stretching program, and we do things with light bars, and we do things to get them into those positions. Other thing I do quite a bit is we do a lot of bodybuilding for some of these kids. They're all sizes. They're all shapes. Some are they're not that athletic, but you know, like I said, yeah. Well, this is an evolution here. This is we're not sprinting here. This is time. This is year after year after year after year. I'll give you just we'll talk about Andy Vinson's boy. He was out there today. You know, 2 years ago the kid was Peyton was 138 pounds. Now he's 238 pounds, and he just turned 13. So here's a young man who is going to be an eighth grader, and he has had to his body's changing all the time. So as his body is changing, we have to change. So there's things that he has to do where we've got to promote the range of motion stuff, because he's gained 100 pounds and grown 5 inches. We also have to do things where he's doing more jumping and starts, explosive starts in the sprint. So the kids can't do the same thing. They're all similar, but there's differences. So you just have to be able to critique the kid, and it's a year by year thing, and then make the changes. I have a 12-year-old a couple 12-year-olds out here that can do deep back squats with 125 kilos, and I got some of them that can't do 125 pounds. So you know, so it's a lot of it has to do with just the physical maturation of the kid. I mean, you guys know that, but better than anybody. And so you gotta tweak that. As the athlete gets older, it changes again, obviously, because the coaching cues change, things change as they get older, because they have different things going on in their life. You know, the variables are changing in their life. These kids don't have much to worry about. I mean, but like Cameron, who's got a 70-hour a week job, and he works a graveyard shift sometimes. Now Sarah, she showed up here. She was she's a great athlete, but you know, she had other things going on that needed to be corrected. There's some imbalances going on with her that have never been worked on before. And I asked myself, well, how can that happen? you know, she had a subscapular issue, and then and a posterior deltoid on the one side was weaker, and it caused the right shoulder to drop. And so we did a very simple thing where you bent over in like a one arm deadlift type of thing, and you basically were just doing it. We just did a shrugging motion, and we did more shrug work, more trap work, you know, just pulling back, shortening the trapezius up, so she doesn't lose weights behind her anymore. She's more stable in the jerk. The jerks aren't, you know, they don't want to go forward anymore. She can sit in that position and stabilize her, stabilize the arm. You know, the weights overhead. She doesn't miss jerks if she you know, she has the discipline to keep her feet flat. Well, she hadn't missed any jerks at all here in about 2.5 years. So, you know, just changing. It's just critiquing, and it's constantly critiquing and making changes. Preston outside here is another guy who, you know, he had mobility problems. He still has mobility problems. So, you know, he does a lot of work, and, you know, he did the one snatch. It was out of position. So I said, hey, you know, you've got to do the overhead squat. You've got to take it down there, and you have to own the weight. If you're a little sloppy, do another rep. Do another rep in a squat. Go down there and own it down there. You know, when I'll be honest with you, it was 14 years ago, I went to Ukraine, and I was watching some of their coaches. I was there with Pissarenko, and the translation was basically, you need to control and own the barbell. You need to own that barbell. That barbell can't own you. Sloppiness just breeds more sloppiness. You go down, you stay stable, you do the proper breathing against the belt or whatever it is may be, or if your torso, you know, if you're not opening your body properly, even you know, stretching a weird cue of stretching the sternum. Well, the sternum can't stretch. All you're doing is you're just providing better posture. So you know, but own the weight. Stay down there until you stabilize the weight. If you can't do it, then we won't go that heavy. We'll lower the weight a little bit.
That's a big thing that we try to talk about a lot. Is it's really just like the execution of what you're doing, right? If you give the same program to two people and one person, you know, they've got the same, whatever, 5 sets of 2 in the snatch, and they execute it with precision and up to a high standard. You know, every rep is the same, every rep is of high quality, all the technique is good. You know, you're going to have good training and you're going to get good results, because success begets success, right? And doing those things over and over again. What do you think is outside of just really great execution of the program you have, the programs you write, what is like your biggest influence that you draw from the style of training you do? And like, did you have like mentors at some point in terms of kind of pulling your programming from that? Or,
well, you know, I tell you what, that's a great question, because I've had a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think that, and once again, being blessed, but Smitty, Dick Smith from the old York Barbell Club, he helped me out tremendously as an athlete, and he was a guy that was gave the right reinforcement. He would tell you the truth. I also was coached by Norbert Szymanski, who was a guy who just, you know, suck it up guy. I wasn't coached by him much, but I was coached by him. And it did give a lot of technical stuff. Yeah. Jim Schmitz had given me workouts that helped me out when I was a college athlete. You know, there's been a bunch of them out there, but yeah. You know, as far as what I use some of this stuff from those guys, plus what Jeff Johnson, who was, in my opinion, one of the better technical guys in the country, but lacking, and another guy lacking in leg strength, but the guy could power clean 170 and then squat clean 172. You know, he's one of those guys, but at a 181 pounder. But the, you know, but using, if you get to the point where, in my opinion, if the simpler things, if, you know, if Sarah could go in there and she could do the lifts and she could squat, and she could do some pulling, then what do you really need to do? You know, I mean, you don't need to complicate this stuff. Now, she went to the Olympic Training Center before the Olympics, and she was doing power jerks and overhead squats. Well, she tweaked her shoulder, and she tweaked her knee. Well, why make someone do an exercise like that when she never misses a jerk? So some of this stuff is just common sense stuff to me. And so you know, she came back home. Well, she came back home, and she was beat up pretty bad, and we got her back to where she was. You know, she was feeling good about herself mentally and physically, and she did a good job down in Rio. I mean, so it's a it comes right down the way I feel about all this stuff. You know, if you could build a relationship with an athlete, and that athlete trusts you. Because, you know, they can tell if you've got their, you know, if you're wanting them to do well. They know. Yeah. These kids know. These kids don't come to a garage in a subdivision in League City, Texas, and sweating, you know, like they do if they don't believe in what's going on here.
Yeah.
But it's been decades of that type of attitude that's made this small club successful. And, you know, when the thousand or so people that have come through here and done some training, I hope that everybody leaves with a good experience. I've never had anybody, you know, complain about what's gone on here as far as, you know, well, Tim Swartz is not a good guy, or, you know, I'll bring all comers in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, so... you know, I've had lots of people. I've listened to lots of people. Shoot, man, I was glad to have you as a roommate. I'm interested in what you have to say. You know, I want to hear what Coach Berger's got to say. I want to hear what Bob Takano's got to say. I love listening to that guy. You know, and I figure out in my mind what works best for what's going to work best for me and the people I'm training and what's not. You know, it's just it's common sense. It's common sense, the way I look at it.
So with Sarah Robles, and you started talking about it a little bit, you know, she's likely the most successful American weightlifter of this modern era, world champion, Olympic bronze medalist, two-time Olympian. What do you think are things that helps Sarah be so successful? And not just from a, you know, she's got great technique in the jerk kind of thing, but beyond that, you know, her attention to detail, her mindset.
Well, to be honest with you, she doesn't. The way I think about it is that she is having fun. She's having a good time. You know, she comes in here, she trains, and she has a good time here, and you know, she'll wear her hat out there that she bought, that if someone puts a PR, it's got badass written on it, she'll put the hat on and I mean, she's just having a good time. But you know, when she puts the barbell in her hand, it's pretty much all business. You know, she is a person who has the ability to flip the switch on and off, and you know, and then calm down, gear up, calm down. You know, and that's the type of person that she's not wasting energy on while she's sitting over in the corner, you know, gearing herself up, and you know, she's not doing it. She calms down. She'll comment. She'll help. We'll talk about something. She goes over there. She gears herself back up, and she goes again. So she doesn't. And then when she comes to the competitions, she's got her game face on, and she will do whatever you tell her to do, because that's what the coach should say. You know, the coach, I have her best interest. I want what's best for her. You know, so many people say, well, why didn't she go for the American records? She didn't have to. She didn't have to do it at that point. Why did she only take the 160 Olympics? Because that's what we knew she could do. And then everybody else would have to catch her, and they couldn't catch her. We knew she would go beat the Chinese girl.
Right.
I mean, you gotta think about this stuff. You gotta look at the board. But Sarah is the person who is she got a switch. It's almost like when I played football, I didn't have a switch. You know, the Rip Snorton maniac the whole time. I couldn't turn it off and turn it on. You know, but you know, if you have the ability to do that, then you're conserving energy for doing something positive. You know, I told Sarah before the last clean and jerk, I said, hey, can you give me the best 8 seconds of your life? Can you do that and go down in history? I get goosebumps today thinking about it. And she said, yes, I can. I said, let's go do it. And that's what she did. And that's the end of the conversation. So she got a medal around her neck. And it's because she trusts my decision, and I trust that she's going to do her best to do it. Her and I are like, we get along great. Hey, you know what? I empower her to do whatever. I'm not going to stand over her and put my thumb on her and tell her what she needs to do and what she doesn't. And this is just really ridiculous. You know, I'm not going to tell her she can't. Have a good time. Just make sure we get the training in. I was the same way. Put the work in. I don't mean, Sarah's a good Christian girl. She's not going to be out there doing the stupid things. She's paying the price. She's paying the price for success. And finally, United States Weightlifting is, they're starting to help these people some.
Well, to that end, you've been involved in USA Weightlifting for over 30 years.
Yeah.
So you've seen many a regime come and go.
Yes.
Different coaches, different star lifters, different organization, different presidents, different CEOs, all that stuff. How do you feel about the evolution, and particularly in these last, over the last decade, which is, I'd imagine, some of the more significant change, the direction of USA Weightlifting?
Well, I think we're going in a good direction. Just by sheer numbers, we've got so much more talent. You see it all over the place. You see a guy on a Hyundai commercial doing a clean and jerk underwater, or the guy on the or one of those little statues. I can't remember what that was. It was the pro football season where the guys were doing a snatch. You see it. It's all over the place. It's finally getting the credit that's just due. I think that the people there, I think Phil's doing a good job. I can't say much negative about what they're doing. They're much better than what we had. They're better than what we had. They'll answer your calls or your emails. They get back with you. Now, I don't know if they're getting back with me just because Sarah's one of my athletes. I don't know that to be true, but it probably helps.
Yeah.
But if I don't seem to have they get back with me, and I don't bother them much. I'm not just bothering them over silly things. I know they contact me way more than I contact them.
How about internationally? What do you see as, like, over the last, say, 30 years that you've seen internationally change?
I love it, because I love what's happening. Because, I can remember, well, we would go back even further than that, but it wasn't in the 70s. We're looking at the some of the things that were going on, and these guys are obviously on drugs. It's impossible to have the top 4, 5, 6 people in the world from the same republic in a ex-Soviet. You got these 5 guys from Kazakhstan that are beating everybody else. We're okay. So what are they doing? What's going on? But I'm happy that the field is becoming it's a little more honest, because a melting pot like we have in the United States, come on, we got the best genes in the world. It's just the way it is. It's the way genetics is. We should be the best. We should have the best gene pool right here.
Let's say tomorrow we make Tim Swords president of USA Weightlifting.
Oh boy.
What's the first thing that you do to try and improve our performance as a country, so we can have more Sarah Roble types standing on top of the podium?
Well, I'm a fan of what USA Weightlifting is doing right now. I mean, they've got this outreach program, and they're working with some of these other programs, especially some of these wrestling, these states that are great wrestlers. Not everybody's going to get a scholarship. Not everybody's going to be a great gymnast. I like what they're doing. I don't know if I would change any of that. I think that I don't know what you can do unless you've got what USA Weightlifting do by itself. They'd have to have it almost had to be a government sponsored national program, like they did in some of these, like they do in China, or like they do something where they would get, you know, actually go out there and physically recruit, and they're not, I mean, this is America, they ain't gonna do that. And it goes, not yet. I would like to see us with a better recruiting program, and but I've fought this in Texas for as long as I've been here. When I got here, I did some work with the Oilers, Houston Oilers, a professional football team, and you know, I could go down to a high school football coach and say, hey, you know, I played the game myself. I did some lifting. I worked with some professional team. And so what? I did it this way in 1975, and we did circuit training, and this is, it was okay for me, and blah blah blah, and so you know, they don't care, they don't want, you know, they it's hard to get in the door. You guys probably are feeling this too, where you guys are at too. It's just kind of hard to break through.
Well, to that point, the education part of the coaches, that's something where I feel. I know they've got some new people in this role, and the one guy who, what was his name?
The Hungarian guy. Tomas Fahey.
Yeah, who kind of never showed up.
Goodness gracious.
But not to get distracted with that, but the ability to educate coaches and put, you know, these smaller club coaches and youth coaches in a place to learn from people who are sending athletes to international teams and creating, you know, I don't know if you ever read, it would have been 2015, right before 2015 Nationals, I posted an article that was called An Open Letter to USA Weightlifting. And then it talked a lot about the development of an American system, you know, because right now it's like Tim Swords and Team Houston are doing their thing, Max Aiden and Team Juggernaut are doing their thing, and LSUS is its thing, and MASH, and everyone's kind of doing their own thing independent of each other. But it seems like these really successful countries is much more, you know, they talk Russian system, Chinese system, Bulgarian system, that even if it wasn't necessarily the best thing, that everyone doing something more similar, a bit more cohesive plan, I think could be real, real effective.
Yeah. I hear you. How do you get everybody to think that way, though. I mean, I want to tell you something. I'm a team guy. I've always been a team guy. I was raised a team guy. I'm not an individual guy. I don't do this out here for individual anything. I'm doing it for the individual, not for this individual. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm a person that, you know, I want more. I want Max's help. I want your help. You know, I want to know what you guys think. And so, you know, I don't think Tim Sorter is going to be a guy that's going to be part of the problem. I think I'm the guy that is going to say, yeah, okay, let's do it. And if it doesn't make sense, like listening to the gentleman you just talked about, the Hungarian guy who was here for briefly, go over how people should lift weight, how they should do the pull and stuff. And I shook my head and walked. I said to Demos, I said, how is this even relevant to who teaches it this way? And he basically said, well, there's a lot of ways to skin a cat, basically. And I said, well, I never skin a cat that way. Never heard anybody skinning a cat that way. I'm a team guy. I'm on board with stuff like that. I don't know how you get an old school guy. Maybe I'm considered old school, but I don't want to think that I'm stuck in that old school mentality. But there are people that are stuck in that old school mentality that they're not gonna budge.
Do you think there's anything like? Obviously, USAW has grown tremendously. We got a ton more talent. Do you think there's a lot of, or any kind of like negative ramifications of that in terms of clubs or coaches or athletes kind of maybe pursuing the wrong direction or anything that you see as a downside to the growth?
I think that that's, You know, I think that's possible. There are people that I don't want to mention any names, but there are people that I have talked to that have outstanding athletes that because they're just they're pretty much set in their ways, and they just don't care. They think that their ways they think their way's the best.
Right.
And I don't think that they're open for they think they want to listen to you. Now you guys would understand exactly what I mean if I threw some names out there, but you know they're out there, and these guys have been successful. You know,
we'll save that for off air.
Yeah,
we'll get the names after.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not that I don't respect them as coaches. I do, but they're not gonna listen to what they don't really care what the national office thinks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of prima donnas in this sport.
So we spent some time here, and I've seen you at a lot of meets. One thing that kind of struck me when I walked in here or into your gym is you've got everyone, all the kids are saying, sir, they're all respectful. It's a really small space. I mean, it's a two-car garage, and you've got maybe like six or seven barbells going at the same time.
Yeah.
So having a small space, having a team that has, everyone has this level of respect, it seems like, for everybody else around them. What are some things that you would say to like a new coach or an upcoming coach, you know, maybe just a couple of two or three top things in terms of, you know, building that kind of club like you have, the culture and that kind of stuff?
Well, it's just you got your rules. It's you've got gym. It's etiquette. It's, you know, we're no one's any better than anybody else. We're all there trying to get. We have a family here. We have a family situation here. You know, this is not a place where people where they come and they just they don't get to know. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody knows their families. You know, they're from little different communities, and some are from this community. You know, but we know each other well. Everyone's welcome. By the time it goes right back to that. Build the relationship with people. If you build the relationship, then you build trust. And the people out here, they're that way. The bad ones don't stay around.
Right.
You know. So I don't know. I would just say. Bring them in. Now, most clubs is different because everybody has their own space. Maybe that's why this is the way it is. You know, you've got a place, you've got 10 platforms, and so-and-so's down there on the, 30 feet away, and they may never even get to know this other person. But here, my other attitude about what goes on here is that, I want everybody that comes through the door here to learn how to coach. And we have no music playing. We don't use cell phones. We don't have the ears plugged. We're not listening to music. You know, we're here to learn. I'm here to learn. We're all here. We're trying to learn. So, you know, like I was telling you earlier, you know, basically this has been a program that has developed 8 college strength and conditioning coaches. They weren't the best athletes in the world, but guess what? You know, some of them went and played some small college sports, but you know, these are guys that are all in the strength and conditioning field. You come through the door here, you will know more about training by the time you're a junior and senior in high school than by far your high school football coaches know. It's constantly critiquing, constantly talking, constantly reinforcing. Not a whole lot of negative reinforcement unless people are talking too loud to where I can't coach. Or I don't mind if other people chime in and try to help. I want that. We're talking about that. We're looking at people lift the barbell at different angles. We're looking from the back to see if there's a leaning point, or we're looking at the pressure through the feet. We're looking at all sorts of. We are looking at the individual like they're a skeleton, basically. And from my biomechanics background, I'm looking at someone's gait. I'm looking at whether or not they have balance. And we do. We learn how to coach. We learn through the biomechanical part of a movement, which is my background. And everybody. I want everybody to coach. I want everybody to be able to help. So, but we have to respect each other, and that's the way it is. I've never had a fight out here. Never had a fight. 1,000 people come through there, and the majority of them, football players, MMA guys, track and field, but majority of football players, aggressive people. I had 3 guys in an NFL draft this year. Aggressive people, good people. But we're all there to get better, and it's just respect. It's a mutual respect for the 9-year-old kid who's learning how to snatch, and Sarah Robles, who's going to help that kid and care about that kid to help make them better. That's just the way it is. It can't work any other way and be successful in a 450 square foot garage. It has to be that way. Now, I run people through there in maybe a militaristic, way, but guess what? This is the state of Texas. Texas dads don't mind that. A whole bunch of them come out there and watch. They come here. I get weightlifters because they want their sons to play football in Texas. This is football. Now, I have more girls out there today. All in all, there's 50 plus members of this club. It's not a big club, but it's a club that we're family. And they learn how to lift. We have 4 medals winners again at the school age nationals this year, and every year we win something. We won a trophy. Last year we were national champions. This year we got 3rd. But it's the grassroots stuff, bringing people through and put them on their way. It's just respect. It's respect and building that relationship with people. You got to have it. If I might respect my coach, but I may not like him very much, but the older I get, maybe the smarter he is, and then that's kind of happened to me a few times as an athlete.
Yeah,
there's some tough things that I have to go on in there. I've got no tolerance for sexually connotated. I got no tolerance for that. I don't care. I don't care if you're black or you're white or Asian or Indian or anything else. We're all going to be treated the same. Don't say anything bad about him or her or anybody. That doesn't work here. There's no prejudice here. We're the same. And I've had you might want to cut this. I don't know, but I've had people say the N word. I said black kids. I said you're not saying that here. If I can't say it, you can't say it. So we're not talking that way here. You're not going to use that language here. You're not going to take the Lord's name in vain here. I'm not putting up with it. We can't have it. I have neighbors, first of all. I'm not going to have people screaming and yelling. It's a respect. It's a mutual respect, for what's going on inside here and for the neighborhood.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us today, Tim. It's a really cool, unique vibe out there to have so many lifters packed in there and so many high level lifters who have come through here. And it's clearly, so much of that is happening because of your passion for the sport and for coaching and for helping people. So thank you for that. USAW thanks you for that. This is another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. If you like it, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny and or nice. And we always appreciate that. And it helps more people find the show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. 3+ videos a week from the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang. If you're interested in coaching, visit juggernautcoaching.com for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, and power building, multiple different levels. Upcoming events, we will be on Long Island on August 19th for the Juggernaut Performance Summit. Max, myself, Dr. Mike, Dr. Quinn, and Dr. James on technique, programming, nutrition, recovery, and mobility. That's pretty much the big 5. The 5 pillars. Why didn't I should have called it 5 pillars? It just struck me.
That's a better name.
And you can pick up some CEUs for the NSCA through that. Tim, where can people learn more about Team Houston, about everything that you do?
Well, the you know, we do have an Instagram page, and you know, it's Team Houston Weightlifting. Also, you can contact me on Facebook or Team Houston USA Weightlifting, Team Houston on Facebook. If you're in the Houston area and you want to go on the USAW website and you're looking for clubs in the Houston area, you can find us there. I don't promote the club too much because I don't have much room. It's all been word of mouth. And it's probably going to stay that way. It's just nice not to have any overhead. I'm not real hard to find. But I appreciate this opportunity and it's not for me so much. It's for basically the kids. I'm happy at what I'm doing. If there's people out there in the Houston area that want their kid to be in a place that it's a positive place for young people, and I'll give them 100%. I tell everybody nobody gets worse by coming over here. Everybody seems to get a little mentoring, so just look us up through the Facebook or the USAW. I appreciate the opportunity.
You can find me max_Ada on Instagram or on Facebook, or you can email me max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram. We are signing off with Tim Swords and Team Houston. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.